This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, you can certainly forgive Bill Clinton for falling asleep during Biden's inaugural speech. I don't blame him one bit. It was a classic Biden. I think it would have been better had he gone to the old playbook of plagiarizing Neil Kinnock to give us something new.
Yeah, the same old, same old. He talked about dreary, dark days ahead and about his dad, you know, with Scranton Joe.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. In addition to the motif of chaos and catastrophe that he inherited, the other was unity. Did you buy any of it? Take your calls. Joe Biden declaring yesterday Democracy's Day.
This is Democracy's Day, a day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
Democracy is patient. Democracy is kind.
Don't make me feel like I'm at a wedding.
It was like
love
that.
Is patient. Love is kind.
And his speech was full of golf clap lines.
Right. Exactly.
Just like that.
And it would have been better if he brought up like Corn Pop or somebody, or, you know, talked more about his childhood, but he talked about his father and the hardships he went through and worrying about health care and yada, yada. But I'm just saying it's the same thing that we've been hearing the past 50 years from Joe Biden. I mean, he came to Washington, D.C., guys, when he was 29 years old. He's now 78, and he's now president. So he's the ultimate insider.
He did have a message to those who didn't support him, like me.
To all those who did not support us, let me say this. Hear me out as we move forward. Take a measure of me and my heart. And if you still disagree, so be it. That's democracy. That's America.
Yeah.
The right to dissent peaceably within the guardrails of our republic is perhaps this nation's greatest strength. Yet hear me clearly. Disagreement must not lead to disunion. And I pledge this to you. I will be a president for all Americans. All Americans. And I promise you, I will fight as hard for those who did not support me as for those who did.
That's not anodyne.
But will he, though? Do you think he will?
Did you catch sort of the Hans and Franz rip there? Hear me now and believe me later, or something like that. He's here to pump us up. And that's what he did.
Are you up?
That's what
he did. He did take some subtle shots at President Trump.
Each of us has a duty and a responsibility as citizens, as Americans, and especially as leaders to defend the truth and defeat the lies.
So President Trump was not defending the truth and lied to us? Is that what you're saying, Joe Biden, President?
You know, the interesting thing about Joe Biden is he's 78 years old, as you said. It recalls something that I said upon Trump's inauguration, and I don't think I was alone. You're not going to turn a 70-year-old man into somebody he's not.
Right.
And so you're also not going to turn a 78-year-old man into somebody he's not. And who has Joe Biden been for the last half a century? Hail fellow, well met. A guy that sort of hangs around so he can hang around. A fabulist because he doesn't have any substantive accomplishments. And who is most known in the public's mind, in addition to being Obama's vice president, as a guy who, as I said yesterday, fills his mouth with shoe leather every time he speaks. So what do you expect?
I have a shoe leather moment when he, you know, asked us, Stan, to open your soul.
We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue,
rural versus urban, or rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this.
Yeah, I know. There's no red states. There's no blue states. I mean, it's Obama's DNC speech. It's every politician's unity riff. There's nothing new there. There's nothing particularly compelling. There's nothing even actually notably competent. It is paint-by-numbers political speechifying. And that's all it was. So for those, he didn't go after Trump and he struck a note of unity and this and that. He didn't really. He didn't really. It's paint-by-numbers can't. It's not worth your time. And you know how you know it means nothing? Because for all of his pontificating about unity and restoring America's place in the world, you catch the MAGA line?
We can deliver racial justice and we can make America once again the leading force for good in the world.
We're going to make America great again. Leading force for good in the world. He turned around and killed 11,000 jobs and insulted Canada by nixing the Keystone XL pipeline. So
let that sink in, people. 11,000 jobs.
So, you know, all of that flowery rhetoric, and that's generous. And what do you have? The Paris Peace Accord, killing the XL pipeline.
Stopping construction on the border wall.
Disbanding the 1776 commission. Come on.
Allowing pathway to citizenship for 11 million immigrants.
Tony in Downers Grove.
Yes, Dan, I say it was the grade school version of an Obama speech. And why doesn't the irony seep through to people? But everything that is said is the antithesis of what they do. And it's just amazing to me that people don't wake up to this. You made a comment a few weeks ago, and I've been saying this, is that, you know, the Democrats lie, but their lies turn into policies. That's the difference. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Tony. Well, I think some people may be catching on to it because count had about 350,000 views on the official White House YouTube channel of the inauguration, that, you know, where people were encouraged to stay away. 350,000 views. I mean, the guy got 80 million votes. Where's the enthusiasm?
Well, I think that's why they put flags there, too, to fill up the mall, because if they had been open for business, I don't know if people would have come. One, because maybe they're scared of COVID and super spreading situations. But two, the love for Biden, I don't feel is there. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline.
They may have come for Effie Trinket, who sang the national anthem. Maybe.
For what? Oh, yeah, from the Hunger Games. Wasn't she great, Lady Gaga? That's who he's referring to, folks, in case you don't know. But she had a Mockingjay pin on her shirt, didn't she?
Looked
like it.
Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Hi. It looked like Biden had kind of like a mullet going. He had like the long hair in the back. Is that just trying to connect with the
He needs to. He needs to ask Garth Brooks for a recommendation for his hair plugs guy.
I'm taking a break from the news. I didn't turn the TV on yesterday. I'm just going to catch the. I couldn't. I was working anyway.
I watched every single minute. I watch about 9 hours of television straight. Yep.
I couldn't do that. No way. I'd go nuts.
That doesn't make you sound as good as you think it does.
I'm just saying.
I know.
This is the closest thing we have to royalty. I've been doing it since I was a little girl, watching Jimmy Carter and Reagan take over.
Yeah.
And the balls that they used to have.
I know. You're not going to turn an 80-year-old woman into somebody she's not either.
Listen, guys, the dark days. I mean, can he dark days equal better days?
Awful.
What the hell is he talking about? I you know, the MAGA copying the MAGA thing. I mean, copying is the highest form of flattery, right?
So it's plagiarism for Joe Biden.
It's plagiarism. Exactly,
Dan. That was in one part of the day that I did not like when he said, we have some dark days ahead in the winter. It's going to be perilous.
Yeah,
please.
Winter is coming. I got it.
Yeah, winter's here, buddy.
She steals from Hunger Games, Lady Gaga. He steals from Game of Thrones. I get it. There's nothing new. Greg and LaGrange.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Hi. Hello.
My problem is I've seen this act before, and I heard transparency from Jen Psaki. Well, let's start hearing about some transparency. Let's start asking some real questions. My fear is, what I want to see is his policies. his policies on educating the youth in this country. Like if you read the Christopher Rufo piece in City Journal about what's happening right outside our door in Missouri,
yeah,
and what's happening in our own state legislatures, that's dangerous. How are they going to treat the suburbs? What, the suburbs? Is the HUD secretary going to treat the suburbs like they thought they would under the Obama administration? In law enforcement, are we going to support our law enforcement when we have problems in these cities and protect people's individual freedoms, their right to liberty and life, and their property rights? That's the story I want to see written by President Biden. I want to see him support those values. Those are the values of this American, and probably a lot of others, too. Thank you.
Pray hard, Greg. Thanks for the call.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So it was reported yesterday that President Trump did leave Joe Biden a note following the tradition of outgoing presidents leaving incoming presidents, some note of congratulations or advice. And Joe Biden would not reveal the contents of that note, but said it was very generous.
Yes.
The president wrote a very generous letter. It's because it was private. I will not talk about it until I talk to him. But it was generous.
What do you think it said? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. I have actually obtained a copy of the contents of the letter, but I'll wait.
Because you're such a big shooter, huh?
That's right. I'll wait to share what the actual contents are until after people suggest what President Trump did or should have written to Joe Biden.
I was very surprised, considering he never called him. They never got together. They never had a kumbaya moment. I was really happily surprised that he did leave him a note. And there was this fake letter going around yesterday.
A meme
saying, Joe, you know I won. And then
You knew
Donald
it was
Trump's
fake because it referenced him as Joe rather than Sleepy Joe.
Oh, exactly.
It wasn't authentic.
Or president. So I'm dying to know what that letter said because I'm still a little salty that he and Melania didn't go to the inauguration. I mean, Mike Pence and his wife, Karen, did a wonderful job, and it was very
did a wonderful job
regal,
sitting in a seat.
Yes. And then they walked down the steps of the Capitol as, you know, a black SUV was waiting for them to whoosh them away. But Kamala Harris and her husband, what's his name? Greg. What's the first guy's name? Or this Kamala Harris's husband's name?
I don't know. Mr. Harris?
Mr. Harris. I don't know. But I'm Doug. They walked them down and then, you know, escorted them to the car. Well,
do you think you're on the E Network with Mario Lopez? What is that? Does this have to do with anything?
I'm just saying that was what we're normally used to seeing: the president being at an inauguration and passing the torch, so to speak, over to the next generation, the next leader. And that didn't happen, and I'm salty about it because I think Trump should have sucked it up and manned up and have been there to be part of history. And did he just look like? Well, it looked petty and stupid that he wasn't there, to me personally. And I'm sure I'm not alone. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
I think we've sawed all the sawdust we can on President Trump not going to the inauguration. Weeks before, the evening of, now it's the day after. I mean, it's just like Hillary Clinton talking about Russian collusion. All roads lead back. On COVID-related fronts, since Biden spent some time talking about COVID and
the dark days,
all the challenges that he faces, and winter is coming, and the White Walkers and so forth, there were some notable news events yesterday with respect to COVID. One, obviously, his federal mask mandate for federal employees on federal property and everybody else on federal property, too, which then he turned around and violated at the Lincoln Memorial.
Did you see that? And so did his grandkids and his daughter. Yeah, how quickly they set rules that they don't follow. That took, what, a hot second?
More importantly than that performance theater, as unsatisfying as it is, did you see the news from Amazon?
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Amazon.
Amazon has extended an offer to President Joe Biden to assist with national COVID vaccine distribution. Sent a letter to Joe Biden dated January 20th. Congratulations. As the nation's second largest employer, Amazon has over 800,000 employees in the United States, most of whom are essential workers who cannot work from home, blah, blah, blah. We have an agreement in place with licensed third-party occupational health care provider to administer vaccines on site at our facilities, prepared to move quickly once vaccines are available. Additionally, we're prepared to leverage our operations, information technology, and communications capabilities and expertise to assist your administration's vaccination efforts. Our scale allows us to make a meaningful impact immediately in the fight against COVID-19. We stand ready to assist you in this effort.
Well, where were they when President Trump was still in office?
Well, that's the obvious question. Yeah. Your goal of 100 million Americans vaccinated in the first 100 days of your administration. Actually, the goal was 100 million Americans vaccinated by the end of February, set back in December by the Trump administration. So he's actually extending the deadline for the stated goal of the federal government, the people's federal government. Yeah, Amazon. If Amazon had waited to do this for an incoming Republican president, if it was Biden outgoing and Trump incoming, how do you think that would be received by Nancy Pelosi and Pagliacci Schumer and the Democrat Socialists and their allies in the D.C. press corps? Perhaps an accusation that they were responsible for tens of thousands of deaths because they waited for political reasons mm-hmm. to offer their assistance when assistance could have been provided to distribute the vaccine more quickly and get more shots in arms and save lives.
Well, it's like Pfizer waiting till after the election to announce that they're going to be making full manufacturing of the vaccine. They could have done that the Monday before the election, but they waited until after the election because they didn't want it to be political. Well, let's save lives. It's all about saving lives, guys. Shouldn't wait for political reasons. And the WHO, by the way, changed the guidance on how tests should be interpreted. Those weak positive test results, the antigens, they're now saying that they should not count as positive test results. I thought at least they'd wait a week until after Biden was in, not an hour.
Right. And the importance of that is that it reduces the case counts because
right.
Now you have a new standard for determining a case. Joe in Hoffman Estates, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, from what I understand, he screwed up the president for at least a week because the letter read, "Hello, sir. If you see Joe Biden, please give him this letter."
All right, Joe. Dan in Barrington.
Maybe Dan didn't want to talk to you, Dan.
Well, I don't know why he called then. Bob in Oswego.
Hi, good morning, guys. I think since he commented that the letter was so generous, I think that President Trump may have said something like, "Hey, Joe, go blank yourself over and over and over again, generously."
All right, Bob. Mike in Union.
Good morning. Hey, Amy, I agree with you for one thing. Trump should have went, donned a bear sweater, and walked off the stage with the middle finger in the air like everybody else, and that would have been great. That's the only reason I would have expected him to be there.
But it livened it up. Woo.
All right, Mike.
It was a long 9 hours. Woo.
Len in Fox Lake.
Hey, morning, guys. Hey, tongue in cheek, I got to make sure I say that.
Oh yeah.
You guys got to start. You guys have to start advertising the suicide hotline a lot more on your radio station after what just happened. So, but up bump.
That's not funny. Sorry.
I'm kidding. You guys have to do me a favor and in the next, in the upcoming months, think of ways that the conservatives. Think of what we can do, because we're all feeling pretty screwed.
All right. Thanks, Len. Todd in Lake Geneva.
Hey, good morning. I am completely confused by the fact that Amy thinks that President Trump should have been at that inauguration. For 4 years, they attempted to take down his administration. Prior to that, they tried to take it down before the election. And that he's supposed to show up. These people not only belittled him, they berated his family? Absolutely not. He completely did the right thing. And to think that he should show up there, Amy, I'm not sure what you're thinking.
I'm just a traditionalist.
Greg in Western Springs.
Good morning, you guys. I'm now in Naples. I've called you before. And
oh, very nice.
It's wonderful to have
congratulations.
Moved out of Chicago. It's going to be 70-something
okay,
here today.
Okay, you don't have to rub it in there.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Are you in Naples? Are you in Naples permanently?
Yes, and I sold my house in Western Springs yesterday.
Oh, congrats.
Did you join a club down there yet?
Oh, damn.
No. No.
Dan thinks you should, and then
golfer.
You can invite him. Well, you can learn how to golf, join a great club, and then have a new friend.
Yeah, I know. Hey, you guys, Biden said yesterday, we're going to unify, we're going to heal. But the first thing I want to do to show everybody that and to demonstrate that is to hold an impeachment trial and pound the previous president into the ground to show America how much we hate him and everything about him.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for the call. Jen Psaki, his spokes being, saying that, the Senate can multitask. They can, you know, move our socialist agenda while also executing a trial against the outgoing president. Dorothy on the Northwest Side.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Dorothy.
Hi. The note was short and sweet. So long, sucker.
All right, thanks for the call, Dorothy. That doesn't sound like it would be characterized as very generous, but maybe Biden wasn't telling the truth. Here's what the actual letter said.
Oh, you have exclusive information, insider info?
And I'm quoting. Mm-hmm. My dearest Joe, I couldn't sleep last night because I know that it's over between us. I'm not bitter anymore because I know that what we had was real. And if in some distant place in the future we see each other in our new lives, I'll smile at you with joy. And remember how we spent a summer beneath the trees, learning from each other and growing in love. The best love is the kind that awakens the soul. You heard Joe Biden talking about
see your soul.
And makes us reach for more. That plants a fire in our hearts and brings peace to our minds. And that's what you've given me. That's what I'd hoped to give you forever. I love you. I'll be seeing you. Donald J. Trump. I think it's a nice note. That's why
a lot of love yesterday.
That's why Joe said it was very generous. And if anybody can give me the movie that letter is actually from, I'll be both impressed and you should be mortified.
And you can win a T-shirt. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You have T-shirts to give away?
We have T-shirts to give away. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Just give Quinn your address and I'll send you one.
Pete and Racine.
Good morning. Say, all the companies that are bringing all the vaccines out now that Biden has been sworn in, and Amazon, it's like a football team that's ahead 46-6 and putting their backup quarterback in halfway through the fourth quarter. He gets to raise his hands for the victory at the end of the game, but he didn't do all of the heavy lifting and work of the game itself.
Thanks for the call, Pete. Steve and Gary.
What's your favorite?
Yes, good morning, Dan and Amy. Yes. It's a time of Shiva here, I guess, if I were Jewish, but that's beside the point. Joe's speech didn't really come down to a Lincoln-esque, like, malice towards none. And when they speak of unity, I just see conformity. And if you don't conform, you will be repressed. Have a good day, and we'll get through this one day at a time. Take care.
Thanks for the call, Stephen Gary. Ron on the South Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, I just want to agree with you. I think he should have been there. And you said it looked stupid and, oh, what's the word, petty. And you know what? And you know what, Amy? That's why he lost. And for those folks who are having problems with it, grow up. He lost. Have a good day.
Hey, wait, Ron. Hey, do you know where that note is from? Do you know what movie?
No, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Say anything?
That's because he's a man. Ron's a real man. He wouldn't know.
Say anything? 16 Candles.
No. I'm surprised you don't know. Very surprised, actually.
Well, what?
Very, very surprised. It is.
What generation is it? What decade is it from?
It's the sort of sentimental pap that you lap up. So I just. Come on, think.
Well, what year is the film from? Oh, Can I at least have that?
No.
I don't, a decade?
It's around. You know, it's been around. It's, so I don't know, 10 or 15 years old. Bill in LaSalle County.
Dig deep.
You had a previous caller was talking about what could you guys do to help these conservatives who are feeling ill. There's two things, and you talk about it all the time, is the local elections. You need to get involved at your local precinct, be an election judge, be a precinct watcher. And then the other thing, everybody, you'd be amazed how many people don't know what's about the Convention of States. The only way we're going to get back our federal government from these swamp creatures, including Turtle Mitch, is Convention of States.
All right, Bill, thanks for the call. Would it, did you figure it out yet?
No.
Would it help if I gave you the real names of the
characters?
Author and and the person to whom the letter was directed?
You could try.
Noah wrote the letter to Allie.
Oh, no notebook.
Yes.
Yes! Woo! Nicholas Sparks.
Again, that doesn't make you sound as good as you think it does. Now, of course, I'm the one who dug it up, so
exactly.
That doesn't make me look it very good either.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Thankfully, the inauguration of President Biden went off without incident yesterday. No violent extremists on the right did any damage around the country that I'm aware
of. Yeah, no, all the state capitals, no reports of any protests or any form of violence.
Oh, yeah.
People
there
didn't
was...
even show up in Springfield.
Oh, yeah, there was one, actually.
Where?
Antifa. Outside of Colorado's Capitol building in Denver.
Well, those aren't right-wingers.
No, I know. I was being sarcastic about violent right-wing extremists. Denver, outside of the Capitol building, Colorado, fenced off. Mob yelling, "No more cops in our community, F the pigs," as police tried to extinguish the flames that were attendant to their setting American flags on fire.
I thought Biden was going to make everything better, that there was going to be unity. Yesterday was declared a day of unity.
A related story, Antifa.com. If you go to Antifa.com, it now jumps to the WhiteHouse.gov website. That didn't sit well with Biden's digital director, Rob Flaherty. Whoever owns Antifa.com and is redirecting it to our website as a troll, the VP very obviously has, wants nothing to do with fringe groups. Excuse me.
Uh-oh.
Excuse me,
oh,
Mr. Flaherty.
No.
That is not a fringe group. That's an idea. Yeah. Oh, taking notice of Antifa, which has been wreaking havoc on the streets of Portland and New York and San Diego and now Denver since the new year to little notice. Related story. We'll see how this plays out, including with some of the prosecutions of the responsible parties for the violence that took place on the Capitol on January 6th. But there is photos circulating of people dressed in the black garb of the Antifa, or the fascist protesters, rioters, thugs, changing their clothes into red, white, and blue, ostensibly to impersonate Trump supporters at the Capitol on January 6th. We'll see. These pictures are circulating, haven't been confirmed, but I'm raising the issue. There's also a video out of a Trump supporter imploring Capitol Police to get reinforcements. Why are you letting this happen? Why haven't you called for backup? Where is your backup? Pointing to the Capitol building. This is our damn Capitol building. You are all letting it get destroyed on your watch. F you all. Call for backup. Get some help down here. That was a man wearing a Make America Great Again cap approaching a police officer and shouting at him. He turned away, then added, "If you don't want to give your effing backup, they obviously don't give a blank about you. These people want blood." So the question is, who are those people? that precipitated the violence. And remember, we do have conspiracy charges, at least one conspiracy charge that has been filed by federal prosecutors. Conspiracy implies planning, implies that it was set to go regardless of what President Trump had to say.
And that kid from Provo, Utah, John Sullivan, African-American kid, who's a BLMer, he put on Trump garb to make it look like he was a Republican, you know, there to support Trump.
And then, to make it look like he was a reporter.
He videoed himself.
Of course.
He said he was there as a journalist.
So, again, this is not to say there weren't Trump supporters who were improperly and illegally in the Capitol.
Because there were.
Mm-hmm. This isn't to say that some Trump supporters may not have gone beyond that and engaged in violence in addition. But this is to say we want to get a complete understanding of how the breach was precipitated, by whom, who the responsible parties are, regardless of who they supported. So we understand what actually happened versus just accepting the leftist narrative, including the hyperbolic claims that people were a threat to stealing our democracy or overturning an election. And usually when people are making such hyperbolic claims, such baseless claims, it's because the underlying story doesn't hold up and they just want you to focus on the threat rather than who represented the threat. So we'll see. Oh, and by the way, we're going to talk a little impeachment since that's going to go forward, as we mentioned last hour, next hour, at the top of next hour with Andy McCarthy. So that should be interesting. Stay tuned for that. Jan in Hoffman Estates, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Listen, I'm worried to death about this country. I believe this whole issue was a big setup there in Washington, and they just want to portray and, you know, alarm the entire nation that 75 million people in this nation are for ill will of this country, and I'm just sick of it. And they put up all these barricades and everything, and who knows what they could do behind closed doors. They have this phony impeachment with Schiff with all these lies. I don't know what we can really do if, you know, things really get out of hand. We really can't do anything. And it was all misinformation. There was nothing going on at the Capitol. I kept hearing that every 8 minutes on the news saying, What is this talking about? What are they talking about? Some kind of at the Capitol? I didn't know anything about it, and it's just a big fraud.
Well, they got some bad intel.
Thanks for the call, Jay.
Yeah, there was some intel that's saying that there are going to be, you know, insurrections at every state capitol. That's why Springfield, Madison, Wisconsin, Sacramento, they all boarded up and put fencing up and then called out their state's National Guard to guard the Capitol, and no one came.
And then treated all the National Guardsmen like suspects.
Yep.
Which is a good way. There's also
sickening.
There was video circulating of some National Guardsmen seemingly turning their back on Biden's motorcade. I don't know if that was like a de Blasio NYPD moment where, you know, NYPD purposely and very obviously turned their back on de Blasio when he was speaking as a way of expressing their opinion of him. I don't know if that's actually what happened in this video that's circulating. You know, they were looking at the crowd rather than the motorcade and so forth. That could very well explain it, too. But it's curious.
Well, it looks, yeah.
Particularly in the context. And by the way, just to Jan's point, right, violent extremists, white supremacists, Biden made references and inferences to that throughout his 20-minute inauguration speech yesterday.
Oh, he sure did.
And
a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat.
Mm-hmm. And it's important to understand what they're doing, the Jacobins, and the man they're going to run who sits in the Oval Office. It's easy to stop thinking by stopping speech, by calling speech you disagree with hate speech. And those who run afoul of the crackdown, of the purge, well, they're violent extremists. 74 million violent extremists who voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. And listen to Joe outlining the challenges we face as a nation. So here's where the orthodoxy will be imposed when it comes to policy and discourse on these topics.
once-in-a-century virus that silently stalks the country. It's taken as many lives in 1 year as America lost in all of World War II. Millions of jobs have been lost. Hundreds of thousands of businesses closed. A cry for racial justice, some 400 years in the making, moves us. The dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer. A cry for survival comes from the planet itself. A cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat. Mm-hmm.
So, climate apocalypse, race, identity politics, and identity politics generally, and COVID lockdown performance art policies. The businesses, the doors were shuttered. No, the virus didn't do that. We did that. You did that. Politicians did that. Frightened Americans did that.
And I hate when they compare the death count to any war or to 9/11. Senator Rand Paul, he was on Fox News. He said, if you read his speech and listen to it carefully, much of it is thinly veiled innuendo, calling us white supremacists, calling us racist, calling us every name in the book, calling us people who don't tell the truth.
Yeah, but it's more important than that. It's bigger than that. Rand Paul is missing the point. That doesn't go far enough. Connect the last dot. There is a purpose to it. The purpose to it is outlined by those challenges Joe Biden says we face. So those who would oppose what the left aims to do under the auspices of fighting those challenges that have been outlined are illegitimate. They're seditious. They're violent extremists who traffic in hate speech. Keith and Carol Stream.
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that John Colvin guy that was impersonating MAGA, he wasn't the only one that got caught. There's another gentleman named Adrian Del Rios. He was that QAnon guy that was pushing that security guy up that staircase. It shows that he has a rap record from Portland as Antifa. Hmm. So I'm just putting this out there that he's not the only one that's, wolf in sheep's clothing.
Thanks for the call, Keith. Look, there's been more than 100 arrests. I haven't gone through all of them. I don't know what's publicly available on every single person that's been arrested. I mentioned the conspiracy charges that have been filed by federal prosecutors, at least against a couple of them. So, you know, we're going to dig on this and we're going to share information as it becomes available and give an accurate picture of whatever it is. I have no preordination of who was responsible. We're providing information as it becomes available to challenge or confirm the left's narrative about what happened on January 6th.
Well, 125 have been arrested, but there's 300 active cases right now.
So we'll see if it holds up. That's what responsible people should do. Understand what happened. You may have supposition about what you think happened. Now let's let the system work, the legal system, and let's see if that story holds up. Who should be afraid of that? Don't we want the truth? Isn't that what Joe Biden said in his inaugural speech? The truth? Bill in Orland Park.
Dan and Amy, we love you out here in Orland Park. And hey, I haven't seen any.
Some people in Orland Park like me too.
Okay, I know they like to golf too.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any numbers on the number of people in the Capitol and the number of people at the rally. I think it's totally out of proportion. My estimate is 500 to 1,000 in the Capitol and 1 million at the rally. It's way out of proportion. These people are so full of hate. It's unbelievable.
Well, Capitol,
thanks for letting me talk.
Yeah,
thanks,
Capitol Bill. Police said there's between 500 to 800 that were inside the Capitol, and that's it. But there were thousands outside. At first, we heard 30,000. Then we're hearing 100,000 people were there.
I've heard estimates in the hundreds of thousands. I don't know. I don't know that we have a good count or count that we trust. Those estimates have been all over the board. But the estimate about the number of people who breached the Capitol running around, 500 seems to be the number that's been reported.
And again, 125 arrested, 300 they're still actively looking for.
Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys.
given everything that Biden says, and I'm sure him and the Democrats are going to go forward and see to it that all us racist haters, so on and so forth, are done with as they see fit, how does this not end in some type of civil war? I mean, I just don't get, you know, how this does not end really badly, given then, you know, you're a bad person, I'm taking your guns. Most everybody I know that owns guns, their attitude is they want my guns, they're going to have to come take them, and, you know, that ain't going to end well. You guys have a good day.
Thanks, Greg. Dave in Wakanda.
Yes, good morning, Dan and Amy. Thank you for taking my call. I think, Amy, you went to high school with me. Any event.
Did we go to prom together?
I met a guy you went to high school with.
No, I don't think so.
I met a guy you went to high school with at Rebel Diners, our Rebel Diners lunch at Marino's in Elk Grove Village on Tuesday.
Did I go to prom with him?
He's going to take me out to play Ivanhoe.
Oh, is he?
I thought he was the only one from your high school you didn't go to prom with, but now we have two, Dave and Wakanda as well. Dave,
how about that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
Any event, I wanted to touch base. You just kind of did talk about the number of people inside the Capitol versus the people outside.
Right.
Now, I've always thought about this. If Trump incited insurrection, you think they would come with hammers and baseball bats? Yes, there were a few people with zip ties and things, but, you know, it's just so out of proportion that the Democrats have blown this so way out of proportion. And it just seems like there's no defense that we can say that will appease the Democrats.
Well, the Democratic lawmakers and some Republican lawmakers are upset because their workspace was, you know, interrupted. Like, people rifled through Ted Cruz's desk. I think that's so wildly inappropriate, what they did in Nancy Pelosi's office. I mean, they didn't take a lot of items, but they just threw papers around, and it's I would have never in a million years been in there.
Nobody is defending what people who illegally entered the Capitol did. Nobody's doing that. So you're making an argument against a contention that has not been offered.
Well, it sounded like Dave was defending their actions.
No, he's talking about the response to what actually occurred. How did President Trump incite somebody to leave pipe bombs at the RNC and DNC's office? Those pipe bombs were made before that individual arrived in D.C., yes, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the 11 Molotov cocktails that were found inside a van.
It's this cheap condemnation that this nation is addicted to. It is just that, cheap. It stands in lieu of any interest in understanding what occurred, whether it's on January 6th or in other instances. There's no ability to discern. There's no ability to separate. It's everything this or everything that. It's the analytical skills of the infant. And I can understand why people are tired of it, because I am too. And the more that you come over the top and try to tell me that up is down and black is white and I'm not to ask questions, the more resistance you're going to get. That is not the way to achieve unity. That's an effort to enforce uniformity. And that ends badly here, like it always has everywhere. Jim in Sheboygan.
You know, Dan, I want the truth about the Capitol and what happened on the 6th, but I still want the truth about the Kennedy assassination. I want the truth about the FBI investigation, and I want the real truth about the election fraud. And don't let them bury the story on what happened on January 6th, when the important issue is the election fraud. That's all.
All right, Jim. Thanks. Candace in Mount Pleasant.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, I have 4 points to make, so if you need to go to commercial and come back, I need to make these four points.
Thanks for producing
the
show.
We'll check with our boss,
too. Do it quickly. How about that?
Okay, first point, Dan, brilliant point. I agree. I think this has to do about the digital warriors who helped Trump get through Spygate, okay? Because Brennan, did you hear Brennan talking about this last night? He wants revenge because Trump got off, and the large reason why he got off is because the truth came out, and there were people to defend President Trump online. Those are the people that they're going to go after. Or anybody who defended, you know, these digital warriors who helped over the past 4 years. Okay, number two, this is not about domestic terrorism. They know that's a lie. This is about asset forfeiture. They can't come for you and take your assets and ruin you like they tried to do to Corsi and Roger Stone and anybody who, you know, was around Trump until they do it systematically. And in my opinion, they want to take your assets. Okay. Okay, number three, I could care less about the Capitol, and I'm tired of hearing about it. What sickens me about all this that nobody has even asked about is who organized this?
Well, that's what we're
getting to. I mean, is anybody suspect? Okay, but who? I heard that it was Alex Jones that organized this stupid march.
It was who?
And that I heard that it was Alex Jones that organized this march and paid for a lot of the buses and stuff like that. And people were asking online, where did he get that kind of money? And somebody said that he had a donor. Well, who is a donor? Did you see him last night? And his he went on this rant, and it's like, let me get to my point.
Yeah, we'll get
my
to your point.
Is,
I don't want to talk about Alex Jones. He's a goof.
He is ramping it up. Well, and why are all these people ramping this up? I mean, it's making me very suspicious. It's almost like they want something to happen.
Okay, thanks for the comments. Yeah, Alex Jones wants to sell more doomsday prepper kits. Okay, that's why he's amping it up. It's fear mongering for profit. So, there's Alex Jones in a nutshell. I mean, all you need, and if there's anybody who likes Alex Jones, I could care less. I could not care less. Alex Jones, in the recent custody proceeding he had with his wife, his attorney admitted that he's basically a court jester. Yeah. He's not dangerous because he doesn't really believe what he's doing. So whether he believes or he doesn't believe it, I don't really care. Either way, it's a problem. And the people who spend any time listening to cranks like Alex Jones are not doing themselves a service. Whether they take him seriously or not, I don't know. There's just limited time that everybody has on this planet. You should try to listen to people who are thoughtful, like, you know, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and a good piece by a Bloomberg columnist named Faye Flam about the vaccines and the messaging. And the top line is that COVID-19 vaccines may cut transmission as well as symptoms. Why is this important? Because you have the CDC and politicians, based on that CDC pronouncement, saying continue wearing masks, social distancing, washing your hands, even after you get vaccinated, because, you know, you're still a spreader. Flam writes, once again, the COVID-19 health message is getting muddled. Even as officials and scientists urge the public to get vaccinated, they warn that after vaccination, we'll still have to go on isolating and wearing masks. It's a mistake to oversimplify this way. We should be talking about using the vaccines to end the pandemic, not filling people with dread that they will be stuck with isolation and masks forever. The evidence is compelling that a strong, rapid vaccination campaign could render COVID-19 less of a threat than seasonal flu through building herd immunity. Without herd immunity as a shared goal, some might skip the vaccine. Influenced by scare stories about side effects and rare allergic reactions, especially if they're young and face only a small chance of dying from the virus. And I would add, if you basically run interference with your own messaging by saying, a vaccine really doesn't matter. You're still going to have to wear masks and not live your lives pre-COVID anyway.
Well, I don't want to live like that. And I know you don't want to live like that. And John Garcia from ABC 7 interviewed one Dan Proft yesterday. Did you watch it, Dan?
No.
All right, it's 6 seconds, so listen up, people.
Wow. President Biden will find out the same thing that President Trump did, which is this is so much dependent on the states.
And that's when talking about, you know, trying to have a federal mask mandate, but the federal government can't control what the states do, and that's what...
Well, states and localities saying. And ultimately people. Why is it that people are so ready to defer to people they know routinely lie to them? These are the same people who tell you the red light cameras are to improve road safety. These are the same people that tell you not to smoke, but they continue raising taxes on smoking, anticipating smokers will smoke and spending money based on that anticipation. Don't gamble. Gambling's bad. We got a hotline set up for you. Look at the money the casinos are generating for the state. We're projecting hundreds of millions. We're projecting billions of revenue. We want to build more casinos. We want to have slots at the tracks. We want to have the lottery. You see, $700 million Powerball, blah, blah, blah. We want you to do it. We need you to do it. We're counting on you to do it. The people that scam you over and over again, you think they're on your side? Why would you listen to them make pronouncements about end times for you? Or your business, or your kids' education. And yet, here we are, almost a year in, and we're on this hamster wheel. And nowhere is there a better example than in the Chicago public school system. Voting to strike. The union's governing body, Chicago Teachers Union, 700-member House of Delegates. I love the
House of Morons. I call it. Honestly, the delegates, like there's some high and mighty group.
I love
bunch of thugs.
I love the idea that the Chicago Teachers Union has, you know, a separation of powers. This is a governing body. This is a well organized, equal protection under the law sort of institution. 84% of members of that House of Delegates voted to support the resolution that teachers shall not go back into the classroom on Monday and they shall continue remote learning because they shall continue to be in charge of the Chicago public schools and they shall dictate the terms of their employment.
And they say all of this is about safety. They tweeted last night, CTO, in the absence of an actual commitment on safety from Mayor Lightfoot and CPS, the best assurance we have right now for the safety of our students. Yeah, they don't care about the students. And the school communities is to continue remote learning.
There are, I'm not exaggerating, there are studies about K through 12 education in 191 countries. This is the most studied aspect, arguably, just based on volume of studies, of COVID-19 transmission. The impact on the young and the school settings, the impact on the young as well as the adults, teachers, and staff in school settings. And there is the closest thing to a scientific consensus we have on almost any topic outside of the world is round. And yet here you have the Chicago Teachers Union. 84% of their August House of Delegates. And you know the majority of the supermajority, probably, of the rank-and-file teachers, the Reds, will fall in line. And if they continue to scare enough by just repeating something that is untrue, that they face a mortal threat by being in the classroom, then people will buy it. Why do they think that? Because they look around and see what people in this city buy, don't they? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I tweeted back to the CTU because they hate me and I don't care. I was scared too when I went back to work, but it's going to be okay. In New York City, the death capital of the world, they have a 0.2% positivity rate in their school system. Thank God none of you are real essential workers like doctors, nurses, grocery store employees. We would all be dead. Can you imagine if doctors and nurses and other essential workers didn't do their job? Yeah, we would be dead. But they're so high and mighty, and they're on this. They just want, you know, what they want. And what Mayor Lightfoot should do, and Janice Jackson, the CEO of CPS, is nullify and void their contract, where they gave them such generous raises. So if you made $55,000, now you're going to make $79,000 in 2 years. Or just stop paying them all together. I mean, really, Dan, because I have to watch it every day. We're on day 317. There is no learning going on. I watch every day this insanity. And it, yeah, it's keeping the kids busy, but 8 hours staring at a screen is not, you know, don't even get me into the mental health aspect of it, but they're not learning anything.
What's happening in your school district? What's happening in your community? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. It's going to be wild if restaurants are open at 25% capacity and the schools are still essentially shut down. CBS spokes being Emily Bolton saying, stripping tens of thousands of students of the opportunity for safe in-person learning is not an option or a viable solution for families who have been planning to return since December. You see, by keeping your kids out of school, they're on your side. You get it?
Well, and then also CTU, which is so about women's rights and empowering women, 2.2 million women nationwide have been kicked out of the workforce or have left the workforce because they have to stay home and do e-learning with their children. If your child is in preschool or kindergarten or first grade, you have to be with them next to the screen every single day. So essentially, you're going to school all over again. It's mind-numbing. And my neighbors that are going through it, God bless them. They've stuck with the program, but I kept saying, just try to get scholarships to go to a public school or go to St. Andrews. St. Andrews has been open since August. What is their count case? They've had zero cases. All the Chicago Catholic schools, the private schools, the Jewish schools, they've had a few in the Catholic schools, yes, but no hospitalizations. And they've, you know, the group that was they were in, they quarantined for 10 days, but they're back. They didn't shut everything down. They're using what's called common sense.
And the result of this is that teachers' estimation in the mind of the public has increased, generally speaking. I don't know specific to Chicago. I haven't seen data on that, but I suspect the same, just as it does when they strike. And what happens after, what happens when they strike? Well, politicians cave, like Lori Lightfoot did.
Oh, yeah.
Like Tiny Dancer did. They get everything they want and more. And fast forward, and they're ever on the advance to, as I said before, dictate the terms of their employment.
Well, I'm sure she's going to throw more money at them. I mean, we're getting, what, $3 billion the city of Chicago is with that latest round of COVID relief?
Yeah, what?
Well, then that's because they're going to ask for hazard pay.
That's really interesting. And I'm really interesting talking about politicians and politicians in the Chicago Teachers Union, which is always the way this is covered by our dumb press corps. Parents, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? We keep saying that all the action is at the local level, which it is, most of it. What do you do? Nothing. You either have the money to send your kid to a private school or to leave Chicago altogether, or you're, you know, Stockholm syndrome into allying with the Reds because whatever, because you're another lobotomized identitarian. Or you're that small percentage of the actual CPS, number of CPS families that's caught in the middle. You don't have enough money to do private schools. You don't have enough money to leave, or there are other things that bind you to Chicago. You're not a lobotomized identitarian, but your constituency doesn't matter. You're not big enough to make a difference, or at least you think you aren't. They've really got everybody carved up very nicely, don't they? James in Southern Illinois.
Hello, Dan and Amy. I listened to you since I got on there just about 6-7 months ago.
Okay.
And I just want to call. We're from Effingham County in Darren Bailey's district.
Yeah.
And our school's been in session for at least over 2 months. Our kids are, they can do the remote learning, but if they start failing on remote learning, they automatically got to go to the schools. So, and then we're also at full capacity at restaurants. If we want to eat down here,
So it's a different world down here.
James, is everybody wearing masks down there?
No, so not. You guys. A few are. I mean, you have the wannabe snowflakes, but I'd say don't.
Mm-hmm.
So.
James,
I don't know. Yeah. And our
I think if for people,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
For people who are not familiar with Effingham and James saying it's a different world down there, the 60-foot cross outside of Effingham is sort of the indication that it's a different world from Chicago, just in case you're at all confused. Effingham is lovely. Thanks for the call, James. And Effingham County, I think, is the most conservative, maybe Ford County. But
didn't they vote for you for governor?
The most conservative county in the state. That's a great place. But again, everybody can't live in Effingham County. There's actually a lot of money down in Effingham County too, if you've been down there. What's that restaurant?
And let's get a good candidate against Pritzker.
There's a restaurant down there that's really. I think it's called Firefly. That's really good if you're in Effingham. I think I've got that right. I think I'm remembering correctly. It's been a while. Sean on the Northwest Side.
Hey, so first thing I did to improve my family life was I moved my family out of Chicago, northwest suburbs. Then I didn't see this ending. So what I did in the beginning of last year was paid off my car, refinanced, and now we had to put our kids through private school because virtual learning, they're not getting anything out of it. So just to save money, then to spend it in private school. But it's for their education.
There you go. Thanks
you're
for
a good
the call,
man.
Sean.
Yeah. By the way, you're right. It's Firefly Grill.
Is it?
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's a good joint.
It's temporarily closed. Oh no.
Get that back open,
please.
Hey, James, if you're still listening, get Firefly back open in case I shoot down to Effingham. Patrick on the Northwest Side.
Hi, Dan. I'm coining a new term. The oxy hypocrisy of the CPS is amazing. I have four kids. Only one sitting home is the CPS kid. Apparently because it's less safe in CPS schools than any other school. The only reason why he's there is for the IEP, and they do not conform. I told him to throw your IEP in the garbage because sitting at home at a kitchen table does not conform to the IEP. Does not. I don't care what they say.
That's
or
right.
How many, you know, how they try to paint it. The other thing is the governor, as far as sports goes, CPS is not playing sports this spring. So the governor will never allow everyone else to play and show how ridiculous it is when nothing happens. So the governor will not sign off on sports play this spring.
I don't know about that. We'll find out next Tuesday. I mean, because I'm hearing rumblings that they're going to do low-risk sports like bowling and swimming, things like that. But
badminton, I heard.
And badminton.
Scott's newscast.
Yeah, but here's the thing. CPS, the basketball league, creates NBA stars. If they think for a second that they're not going to allow Chicago Public Schools League to play, I think they're going to have a different situation on their hands because it's
I'm not
some
so sure.
serious stuff there.
I'm not so sure about that. And here's the thing. By the way, if you're a top 100 prospect,
they're already gone.
Exactly.
They left.
So that's number one. Number two, you don't need to have Chicago open up to give lie to what Lightfoot and Pritzker have done. All you need to do is look around the rest of the country.
Oh, yeah.
And in some cases, just the rest of Illinois.
There are places, and I'm not going to say who they are, that I know that they've never stopped having basketball practice or football practice. And then doing scrimmages on the side with the teams that they should be playing, you know, under the IHSA guidelines.
Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. I'm a teacher going back today to hybrid. And I also live in 214, and they went back the other day. And you know, I'll tell you, hybrid is really a very dysfunctional situation for the kids because you figure in each school, half the kids are remote. Okay. And then they stagger these kids. So as a teacher, you see them really once a week, you have four kids in a classroom. How is this even an educational environment for them? And a lot of kids, they want to go back to in person and they get there from what I've heard, you know, and then they're like, well, I don't really want to be here. There's no socializing. There's no normality to it. It's ridiculous. So I don't know what is the narrative that's going to get these, you know, school boards and superintendents to get us back actually to a normal, you know,
a normal Monday through Friday.
School.
I know. Cause
well,
they,
right. It, well, that, 5 days where they're in there and they are, you know, you have 30 kids in a classroom and it's regular learning where you can do all the different things that you want to do. Cause this is, really dysfunctional, and it's really hurting these kids psychologically. There's no doubt.
Well, that's it. So, that's it. Thanks for the call, Frank, and good luck at school. That's exactly it. What is your out plan? What does that look like? They don't know. They're waiting for somebody else to give them the cover to say, okay, it's okay to open up. And it doesn't matter what's happening anywhere else. It doesn't matter. You can stack all the studies to the ceiling. It doesn't matter. All they're looking to do is cover their ass because they're cowards. Cowards.
They're so worried about litigation. And if we save just one life.
No. This is about systems that are set up for the benefit and the convenience of the adults. This is about cliques. These are grown-up adolescents. That's what you have to understand. That's why draining the swamp is impossible. You've given government too much power at every level. What happens? The cliques form just like they do in the lunchroom at your kid's school. And they are going to impose their will. That is endemic to the human condition. There's the very few among those cliques in power that are willing to be the nail that sticks up. Very few. Do you pay attention at all to what goes on in municipal governments and school boards? You will routinely have a school board president or a mayor or the elder statesman of a village or city, a village board or city council say to newbies, hey, here's how we do things here. We talk about it and then we vote unanimously. We don't need any conflict. We don't need any disagreement. We want to present a united front. Cliques with power over you, over your kids. That's the dynamic.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, Jen Psaki, White House spokesperson, saying yesterday Senate impeachment trial will go forward. The Senate can multitask. They can move President Biden's agenda while also working to convict President Trump in impeachment 2.0. So that presents two questions. One is, can the Senate actually convict and remove? Well, he's already been removed. Can they convict the president once he's left office? Can they? And then the second question, of course, is should they, based on the charges approved by the House? The can they? I go back to, again, former appellate court judge Michael Luttig, who was a Supreme Court shortlister in the Trump administration. A president cannot be impeached after he leaves office, writes Judge Luttig. Therefore, were the House of Reps to impeach the president before he leaves office, he tweeted this out, obviously, before the House voted, the Senate of the United States could not thereafter convict the former president and disqualify him from future public office. He would no longer be the incumbent in the office of the president. Very concept, Judge Luttig goes on, of constitutional impeachment presupposes the impeachment conviction and removal from office of a president who is, at the time of his impeachment, incumbent in the office of president from which he is removed by the impeachment. Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution, verbatim, the president, vice president, all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, shall be removed from office.
Yeah. He's not in office.
And so Luttig and Dershowitz both argue that once you're out of office, you by definition can't be removed from office, so it violates the predicate for the conviction. Alan Dershowitz, writing in the Wall Street Journal, and by the way, I interviewed Professor Dershowitz on Friday on the topic, too. You can check that out on the podcast of my show. He actually addressed, both in his piece in the Wall Street Journal and with me, this precedent I raised of William Belknap, who was the Secretary of War under Ulysses S. Grant, who was tried after he had resigned his office and the administrations had changed hands. And Dershowitz notes, well, one, he wasn't the President of the United States. He was never elected to anything, so it's not exactly on point. Two, while he was definitely guilty of numerous impeachable offenses, the Senate voted in favor of a procedural motion affirming its jurisdiction to try Belknap's impeachment. But two dozen senators who believed he was guilty voted to acquit him 6 months after he left his post and the administration changed hands. They voted to acquit on jurisdictional grounds, even though they knew and believed he was guilty of the underlying impeachable offense. Dershowitz writing, a close vote nearly a century and a half ago doesn't establish a binding precedent. In point of fact, he thinks a more compelling precedent is the House's decision not to impeach Richard Nixon after he left office in 1974 to avoid certain impeachment and conviction. There was no movement to continue the process. So let's explore both of those questions now with our friend Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. So just on the can the Senate do it? Is it constitutional? That question, where do you come down?
Yeah, I think it's constitutional. I have a lot of respect for Mike Luttig and Alan Dershowitz, but I just think they're wrong on this one. You know, I think the world of Luttig, but I thought his column on this was underwhelming, because where he ultimately comes out is who knows what the Supreme Court would say about all this. I think with Alan, it's interesting that he thinks that the only existing precedent actually cuts against him. So he says, well, it's not much of a precedent. And then he has a case that really wasn't a case, which is the House and Nixon. And he says which was not a formal impeachment move, is somehow a more binding precedent than an actual impeachment that, you know, took place in connection with Belknap and the other case. I wrote a book about impeachment back in 2014. For some reason, in 2014, nobody wanted to talk about impeachment. I can't imagine what that could have been.
just as a quick aside, you actually raised in that book instances where you thought President Obama had committed impeachable offenses, just to make that point.
I did. And I also, in the 2016 campaign, because there is no requirement that a person be in office to be impeached, and you have this disqualification provision, I argued that the Republicans in the Congress ought to explore impeachment proceedings on Hillary Clinton based on Benghazi and the emails. I didn't have any expectation that they would actually impeach her, but I thought it might concentrate the mind on the fact that she wouldn't be qualified for office if she were impeached under circumstances where I actually thought she had committed impeachable offenses. But in the book, I point out that the contemporaneous example that the framers had when they wrote the impeachment provisions in the Constitution was Edmund Burke's impeachment of Hastings, who was the Governor General of Bengal. That was going on at the same time the Constitution was being drafted. It was referred to by the framers. Hastings was out of office at the time that Burke impeached him, and nobody thought that that was a reason that you couldn't go forward. Ultimately, he was acquitted, and I think ultimately, if they're foolish enough to go forward with President Trump, he'll be acquitted as well. But, you know, I think that's a different question from whether they can do it. I think they absolutely shouldn't do it, but, can they do it? I think they can do it.
Well, what's the evidence against President Trump, and will they be able to convict on just that?
Well, yeah, you know, this is a great question. I mean, I've struggled with this because I think that the impeachment act that they wrote really doesn't match what he did and has a lot of legal problems. And part of the reason I think he'd certainly be acquitted is this is just like simple common sense now rather than the law. And it goes the same for when you do prosecutions in ordinary criminal cases. But what you want to do is the prosecutor presenting a case to a jury is to give them reasons to want to convict, because convicting is not always an easy thing to do, even if the evidence is there. And what has happened here is they've basically given, in a case which is uphill, because you have to get a supermajority of the Senate, two-thirds, to convict and have the other penalties for impeachment, they've given them reasons to acquit that have nothing to do with President Trump. So we not only have this profound constitutional issue that you guys have been talking about that, reasonable minds can differ on, you have they decided to make it incitement to insurrection. And, incitement as a concept in federal criminal law, not that federal criminal law governs this, but it should influence it. You can't have incitement without an explicit, unambiguous call to violence that is imminent and probable, which, there's nothing that Trump did. As much as I think what Trump did was wrong, I don't think there's anything that he said that comes close to that.
Right.
And then the issue of insurrection, reasonable minds can differ on whether it was actually an insurrection or not. There's a difference between, the rhetorical use of the word insurrection and what it means as a matter of law. And there's a lot of dispute on that. But Republicans must know that the reason that the Democrats wanted to use insurrection in the impeachment article is because they're hoping to invoke Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to disqualify not only Trump from public office, but other Republicans. They want to lay the groundwork so that, people can go into court and say, if you were one of these Republicans who was against having Congress count the votes on January 6th, that you're somehow responsible for the rioting that went on and you should be disqualified from public office. So it seems to me that they're giving the Republicans a lot of reasons to vote against this. And I think if there was an impeachment case here, and I think there is one, the problem was not whether President Trump incited to insurrection. The problem is dereliction of duty, principally, because whether you call what he did, incitement, provocation, egging on, urging, whatever you want to describe it as, and whether you decide what happened is insurrection or rioting or, a protest gone awry, the fact is President Trump knew about it and wouldn't take any action to protect people, protect the seat of
government.
Yeah,
but in his defense, he tweeted out, we're not this party of, we're law-abiding citizens. Don't, retreat. He did tweet out because they can use that in his defense. And then the video that he put out.
Yeah, he's the commander in chief, not the tweeter in chief. So when you're the commander in chief of the armed forces of the United States and the seat of government is under siege, you have to act. You have to protect the seat of government.
Yeah.
And he not only, if you want to talk about his tweets, while people were descending on the Capitol, he publicly rebuked Pence, which is just indefensible. Mm-hmm. So to my mind, the case against Trump is what he did for those hours when he knew the Capitol was under siege. And I think any commander who did what Trump did would be up against a court martial for dereliction of duty.
I'm not defending his treatment of Pence rhetorically or in Twitter form. I agree that he may have been slow on the uptake, but there's a lot of countervailing, complicating evidence to suggest that Capitol Police didn't take help from the federal government that was made available during the preparation for January 6th, that we don't know what McConnell and Pelosi knew and the actions they did or didn't take, what was transmitted from federal law enforcement to the respective sergeants at arms, to Pelosi and McConnell, the respective leaders of their chambers. So there's a lot of unanswered questions, not to mention Capitol Police standing down. There's videos of Capitol Police taking a rather lackadaisical attitude to trespassers in the Capitol. So it's hard to anticipate those things. It's hard to know exactly what's happening in real time. And then obviously whether it was Pence or whether it was Pence at the behest of Trump to scramble the National Guard, that ultimately happened. So I don't know about that dereliction of duty, at least at the level of impeachable. But I wanted to get your take on something else as well, because part of being a good lawyer, as you obviously are, is being a good legal strategist. And it seems to me that Republicans and Democrats both have, for different reasons, a lot of incentive to make this a pro forma exercise and dispense with it as quickly as possible. One is because Democrats have an agenda to move. And yes, you can walk and chew gum at the same time, but something is going to remove oxygen from something else. You can't be, tackling something like border security and caravans or the Green New Deal or COVID-related matters, including a $2 trillion relief package, at the same time as you're impeaching a former president, and expect that all of that is going to get the same level of attention and bandwidth. It's just not going to happen. And for Democrats like Manchin to be talking about considering removing Hawley and Cruz under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, that you were describing, because they did something that other Democrats have done in every election in which a Republican has been elected this century, objected during the electoral certification process, removing them from the Senate. I mean, the backlash that would happen there, they think that keeping Trump in the public's eye is unifying for Democrats and divisive for Republicans. If you made a play to go after Hawley and Cruz to remove them from office, that would be unifying for Republicans, just as right now going after Trump is generating divisiveness among Republicans, to wit Liz Cheney already facing an announced primary challenger.
Yeah, look, I think the backlash from Republicans for all this is going to be intense, and it's not. I don't particularly have any love lost for President Trump. I supported him for re-election, but I was never crazy about him. So, I'm not going to be rioting in the streets over President Trump, and I don't think other people are either. But that doesn't mean that, that people are not sensing the intensity of the feeling about how this got conducted. It's one thing to say that I don't think Trump proved his case in court, which he didn't. It's quite another thing to say that this new way of doing elections is something that we want to see carried forward into the future and expanded, which is what the Democrats would like to do. And you're getting a large pushback, I think, from Republicans and conservatives because they sense that, the powers that be are trying to shut down all methods of communicating, of speaking, of expressing political dissent, and so on. So I would try to disaggregate to the extent we can the intensity of the feeling of being under siege that Republicans and conservatives are feeling and President Trump, because I don't think I think President Trump sees them as bound up together, but I don't, and I think a lot of Republicans and conservatives don't. And I think that's why this whole push on insurrection is so important. I don't think it's just Cruz and Hawley. I mean, they have their eyes on all these guys in the House, too.
True. Yeah.
This is part of the reason what you're raising is part of the reason why I think it's pointless to go forward with this. And there's a lot of downside to it, because you can't remove a guy who's already removed. If you disqualify him, that seems undemocratic. At this point, if he's really as bad as his opposition wants to say, he's not going to be president again anyway, and he's not going to be a factor in the presidential race, if they're right. So what's the point of going forward with an impeachment trial, which puts the country and the Congress under a lot of stress, in order to disqualify a guy who, is not going to be president again anyhow? I see a lot of downside to doing this. I don't really see any upside.
He is Andy McCarthy, former Chief Assistant U.S. Attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer
on AM 560. The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity this afternoon at 2 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, in his inaugural address yesterday, President Biden said it's time to end this uncivil war.
We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this if we open our souls instead of hardening our hearts, if we show a little tolerance and humility, and if we're willing to stand in the other person's shoes, as my mom would say, just for a moment, stand in their shoes.
Oh, your mom came up with that one, huh? Yeah, if we're willing to identify our preferred pronouns, then we can end this uncivil war. The White House website contact form now asks for your pronouns. Select your pronouns.
What's your pronoun going to be? I'm going to go with he.
Yeah. The cultural Marxists and the purge associated with them is on the uptick, not the downtick, despite all of Joe Biden's wonderful rhetoric about soul searching. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Roger Kimball, editor of the New Criterion. Editor of the New Criterion, Roger Kimball, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yes. Yep. Hi, guys.
What about that, Roger? If perhaps you do a little bit more soul searching, then we can end this ugliness. Politics doesn't need to be a raging fire. So why don't you be an intellectual firefighter, Roger?
Yes. Well, I think that President Biden's preferred pronoun is probably she, spelled X-I, as in the
nice
president of China. But, you know, it's extraordinary. He all of these calls for unity are totally disingenuous, because what we see going on here is the same thing that we have been seeing on our college campuses and in the woke corridors of corporate power and the media for years. That is to say, they pronounce the word tolerance, by which they mean you are free to agree with them. They pronounce the word diversity, but they mean complete conformity about any contentious issue. There's only one permitted opinion about, for example, the use of personal pronouns, or the transgender movement, or abortion, or any contentious issue. There's only one permitted opinion. So that is what they mean by tolerance. And I was interested to see that two of the very first actions taken by the new administration were, on the one hand, to attack the ground of America's prosperity by canceling the Keystone Pipeline, thereby throwing out of work thousands of Americans and Canadians, and making a real and a symbolic gesture against the foundation of our prosperity, which is cheap, abundant energy.
Not to mention hurting Justin Trudeau's feelings.
And Herdy, I know, I sent him a packet of Kleenex this morning to dry his tears. But that's one side. That is the sort of the hard side, which has both a practical and a symbolic import. But then there's the deeply symbolic action of canceling, on his first day in office, President Trump's 1776 Commission, which, as you probably know, released its report a couple of days ago on the occasion of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday. This report, and I commend it to everyone, you can no longer find it at the White House website, but it is widely available. I really recommend it. It is no ordinary government white paper. It is a the eloquent defense of the principles of American liberty. And it is by canceling the 1776 Commission, I think the Biden administration has sent as clear a signal as it is possible to send, that they are on the side not of all men are created equal and endowed with a certain unalienable rights, as the Declaration of Independence says, but something much more radical, which is to say the philosophy that undergirds Black Lives Matter and Antifa and the radical wing of the Democratic Party, which is to say that not all men are created equal. Far from it. It's a regime of so-called affirmative action, which means active discrimination against certain groups on account of skin color, on account of sexual orientation, whatever this week's victim preferred victim category is. And when Biden talks about unity, I can't help but hearing that translated into German. There was a term that was much used in the 1930s. It was Gleichschaltung. And what it meant was coordinating, unifying all aspects of German society under a certain philosophical orientation. I don't have to spell out what that orientation was.
That 1776 commission report, too, should be real popular at the left's book-burning parties that should punctuate the Biden administration.
Yes, absolutely. Kindling. Yes. I see it stacked up at Whole Foods and similar woke outlets right next to
Trader Joe's, yes. So when President Biden, it's hard to even say that, was speaking yesterday when he gave his speech, did you think that he was reaching out at all to Trump supporters?
No, I have to admit that I have doctor's orders. I skipped the inaugural address.
Oh, because you have high blood pressure.
But I've heard little bits of it. I have engaged a phonics teacher to help him with the word rural.
Yes.
But
it was just funny because commentators on ABC News, because I watched 9 hours of it, they said that Biden, he was reaching out because he mentioned God a number of times, and Christians love Trump. That was what they were basing that on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the mainstream media is lock, stock, and barrel part of Woke Incorporated. The coverage of this event yesterday is a diabetic nightmare. It was so saccharine, so yes. Sweet. And, just compare the front page of our former paper of record, the New York Times from yesterday, with the paper 4 years ago covering Trump's inaugural address. It's like night and day. Mm-hmm. It's all about the dark tone in the case of Donald Trump, and it's sunny uplands and pink pussycats and so on.
Yeah, even the dark winter
that
Biden described as something to look forward to, apparently, according to the gray lady. So you wrote a piece in Am Greatness about the Democrats being a party of faction and fantasy. What about the Republican Party? Karl Rove, writing in the Journal, The Republican Future Starts Now, he writes, if Republicans are to win in 2022, new prospects for the 2024 presidential nomination must have space to road test messages and show who does better at bringing together traditional Republicans and working class Trump supporters. That's a tall order. The GOP needs a strong message and effective messengers to deliver it. Today, they have neither. Number one, do you agree with that sort of assessment, generally speaking? And number two, do you suggest any emerging leaders that could perhaps constitute the coalition Rove describes?
Karl Rove's a friend of mine. I like him. I don't think he's correct about this, however. We don't live in a two-party system. It's sometimes said that we do. We live in a one-and-a-half-party system. Mm. That is to say, there's a sort of regime party, which is led by the woke contingent, mostly Democrats, but it is heavily populated with Republicans who are not conservative, who are just as much part of this progressive coalition as the Democrats are. And they are, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. Once again, they are part of the anti-populist coalition. So what happened about 4 years ago was that something that people thought was impossible. They hadn't taken precautions against the phenomenon of Donald Trump because they thought it could never happen. And they resolved to make sure that it didn't happen again. And they did. I believe that this election was fraudulent and that it was a coalition of big tech, fraudulent votes through mail-in ballots and so on. Maybe even some hanky panky with certain of the vote counting machinery. That's up for grabs, I think. But they made sure that Joe Biden was seen to be the winner, even though I believe he wasn't. And that's going to happen again and again and again. I think that it's very likely, in fact, that 2016 will be the last free and fair election. The people who actually rule this country, the oligarchy, are not going to let something like Donald Trump happen again. It doesn't. But voters have a choice, but it's a choice that is determined by the oligarchy. They say, yeah, you can pick George H.W. Bush. You can't pick George W. Bush because he is too far outside the spectrum. You know, you can pick Mitt Romney, who's, you know, indistinguishable from the, you know, soy boy pabulum of the Democrats. It's has a certain Grecian formula look. He looks like an old style Republican, but basically he is completely weak. And you can vote for people like that who are not going to make any fundamental changes. It's the globalist agenda. They don't want the people to assert American national identity. They are against the America First policies that Donald Trump formulated. The fact that wages at the bottom, you know, were rising rapidly under Trump, something they don't care about. It's the Goldman Sachs contingent that what they care about is their deals with China, their deals with the global elite. They don't care about America. It's fine for them to open the southern borders, bring in all of these future Democratic voters. That's fine with them. What about the American working class? Tough.
One and a half party system lorded over by big tech oligarchs. I'm going to post that at observation on Parlor. Oh, wait, I can't.
Oh, yeah.
Too soon, Dan.
Roger Kimball, editor of the New Criterion. Roger, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
One radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Joe Biden in his inaugural address yesterday on the challenges that the nation faces from his perspective.
Once in a century virus that silently stalks the country. It's taken as many lives in 1 year as America lost in all of World War II. Millions of jobs have been lost. Hundreds of thousands of businesses closed. A cry for racial justice, some 400 years in the making, moves us. The dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer.
Golf clap.
Shh, he's on the ninth hole, putting on the green.
The dream of racial justice will not be deferred any longer. Well, how does that work in practice from the left's perspective? Our friend Christopher Rufo over at City Journal gives you an example. So when your kids are back in school, or if they're already back in school because they don't live in Chicago, you may want to pay attention to just what exactly President Biden and all of his leftist acolytes mean when they talk about racial justice, equal justice before the law, invoking Lincoln for the purposes of misdirecting you away from the substance of what they're actually promulgating. We go to a middle school in Springfield, Missouri, that Rufo writes about, that held a diversity training program forcing teachers to locate themselves on an oppression matrix and watch a video of George Floyd's last words. This is the indoctrination of teachers for the purposes of indoctrinating the students, you understand. Train the trainer. Train the indoctrinator. Indoctrinate the indoctrinator, maybe. According to the documents that Rufo was able to obtain outlining the program, teachers who attended the program at Cherokee Middle School. The training began with a land acknowledgement claiming that Springfield Public Schools is built on ancestral territory of the Osage, Delaware, and Kickapoo nations and peoples. The diversity trainers, Jeremy Sullivan and Makai Williamson, asked teachers to acknowledge the dark history and violence against Native and Indigenous people before engaging in the day's program of social justice work. Let's all start with an apology, shall we? Then the trainers forced teachers to watch a 9-minute video of George Floyd's last words, as if they're unaware. The film is silent, showing only white text on a black screen, illustrating Floyd's final utterances, including his cries for his mother. Rufo writes, such videos are a common technique in many diversity training programs and cult indoctrinations. The intention is to overload the senses of the participants to create an emotional anchor that serves to justify subsequent political arguments, even if they're non sequiturs. And so come the non sequiturs. You've just watched the George Floyd video. Isn't that terrible what happened? Yes, it is. Well, what are we going to do about it? Teachers are given a handout to locate themselves on an oppression matrix, which defines white heterosexual males as the privileged social group, and women and minorities, transgender and LGBT people, as oppressed social groups. Presumably, those at the top of the oppression matrix, including many of the teachers in the room, are responsible for the racism, sexism, transgender oppression, heterosexism, and classism, quoting, against disfavored groups. Because you have the privileged group, the heterosexual white males, and you have the oppressed groups. The diversity trainers then narrow their focus to race with another handout that outlines concepts of overt white supremacy and covert white supremacy. Overt, obvious, lynching, hate crimes, KKK, neo-Nazi, burning crosses. Right. Overt for the purposes of conflating overt with covert, suggesting they're of the same kind. What are the covert? Education funding from property taxes. A color blindness, calling the police on black people, not believing experiences of minorities, dressing up as minorities, even historical figures, you know, for Halloween. White silence. These are all socially acceptable forms of white supremacy. So how about that conflation? This is the teachers. You think they're not indoctrinating your kids? They're doing it to the adults, such as they are, mediocre students, most of them, room temperature IQs, most of them. Sorry, but that's the truth. That's the data. So on the one hand, burning crosses, men in white hoods, lynchings, that is the same as the covert forms of white supremacy, like calling the police on black people, regardless of context, dressing up in a Halloween costume as a minority, if you're not, not believing the experiences of Jussie Smollett, if you're not a minority. Even more cynically, Rufo writes, diversity trainers such as those at Springfield Public Schools have begun to insist on a standard of affirmative consent, meaning that teachers must not only accept the tenets of the training, but actively vocalize that acceptance. Remember way back when we were tackling the Obergefell decision, the redefinition of marriage? Oh, so many, including on the center right, What's the, if you don't want to be gay married, if you don't want gay, if you're opposed to gay marriage, don't get gay married. Oh, what's the problem with civil unions? Didn't understand you're on a continuum. You're on the left's continuum. Oh, if we just do this, then that's fine. That's not what they want. It's not where they're going. This is a journey. You're not at the destination. One to the other. Tolerance is synonymous with acceptance, is synonymous with celebration. You will be made to celebrate. And so here we have identitarianism, which is a 21st century form of cultural Marxism, where teachers at a middle school are forced not only to take this diversity training course that I'm describing, thanks to Christopher Rufo's investigative work, but actively vocalize their acceptance. You must be an evangelist for this. Tell me this isn't religion. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Diversity training programs, so many of them, writes Rufo, who's done some great writing on this over the last, I don't know, 6 or 8 months since he really committed himself to ferreting this out, operate on a bait-and-switch principle. Following Herbert Marcuse from the Frankfurt School, they predicate rhetoric, their rhetoric on an emotional anchor of racial suffering, then use euphemisms to make their political arguments. In the Missouri training program, the school district proposes empowerment as the solution, which sounds anodyne, even appealing. However, in the documentation, the district defines empowerment as training students to refuse to accept the dominant ideology and their subordinate status and take actions to redistribute social power more equitably. The district defines a euphemism with more euphemisms, but the deeper meaning is clear. American society is white supremacist and must be replaced with a regime of race-based redistribution. And then on down the line to other identitarian categories for the same purposes, redistribution of power and resources that confer power.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
So what was fun to be aghast about but not pay much attention to when it was on the campus of Berkeley or in the Ivy League is now at a Missouri middle school. And let me tell you, in Chicagoland, it's at your schools, too. You have the Chicago Public School System was one of the first to adopt the 1619 Project Revisionist History of America and make that their history program. You starting to snap out of it? Starting to wake up and pay attention? It doesn't matter who the president is, as long as K through 12 systems are who they are run by who they're run by. It doesn't matter who the president is, as long as the media is who it is. You're starting to get the idea that there are fights in your backyard, and maybe spending an inordinate amount of time thinking about the fights happening at the federal level where your impact is much more difficult to matter isn't the best use of your limited time and engagement. Maybe, sort of a corollary to if you can't save the world if you can't pay the rent. You can't save America if you can't save your local school district. Chip in St. Charles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, Amy. If being a white heterosexual male is so terrific, why are they the biggest group that's committing suicide right now? And my other question would be, I've had to deal with affirmative action and government racism my whole life, and we've paid the price for what people from 1619, I guess, until 1865 did, and we had nothing to do with it.
Thanks, Chip. Susan in Glencoe.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Dan. I want to tell you that these tools are being put into Illinois schools already. I have two very good friends that are teachers, one in Crystal Lake, one in Des Plaines. The one in Des Plaines had a Zoom meeting just a couple weeks ago, and they were asked to write down names of people that they think might be dangerous in their community. I was like, are you kidding me? I go, did you write my name down?
Right.
You naughty girl.
They basically were like, you know, targeting people that support Trump, people that, you know, are gun law supporters. My other girlfriend over the summer had a training where she was basically being told that she was secretly racist. It was like they had questions and you had to answer the questions and they were given numbers, and if you didn't get through a high number, you were secretly racist. I said to her, girlfriend, you know, you've dated black men, so you're not racist. I mean, she's the sweetest girl ever, and they made her think that she was secretly racist taking this training course.
Thanks for the call, Susan.
Started lists.
in Missouri, I mean, it's not a laughing matter, by the way. It'll be really funny right up until you're in a gulag. You're in a Cuomo COVID camp, but for race offenders, for thought, you know, for illegal thoughts and expressions. In Missouri, the handout, according to one teacher, originally listed MAGA as a form of covert white supremacy, but it was removed after pushback. So you don't think they'll go after that again and make support for particular politicians an example of covert white supremacy to be prohibited or for consequences to be visited upon those who do? They'll come at it again. They don't stop. Just because there was pushback at one middle school in Missouri, you think that means it's over? Is that what you've seen happen? They get pushback and they just say, oh, okay, well, then we'll just draw a line here. Uh-uh. They incur again and again and again until they get movement forward. Bob in Edison Park.
Yeah, Dan and Amy. You know, I don't know if you guys ever heard of the Longstrom's philosopher, Eric Holfer, but
yes.
He great writing. He wrote back in the 50s. Well, Dan, if you're familiar, he wrote back in the 50s, and basically I'm paraphrasing, that when the strong man, military man, or the businessman, when they take over the society or the system, whatever you want to call it, they're just satisfied with you doing what you're told. He said the danger of the so-called intellectual is, he said, just compliance to their rules is not enough. If you are not a true believer,
yes,
in their cause, you are a threat to their cause. Thanks.
Exactly. Thanks for the call, Bob. And speaking of Hoffer and true believer, his theory about mass movements, revolts, if you will, like the one that occurred in 2016, empowered by Trump in sort of reinstilling confidence in so many people who had lost confidence in themselves in this country, two things are required. One, you have to believe you're in charge of your own destiny. Two, you have to think things can improve and that you can be part of that improvement. If you throw up your hands with respect to either one of those, you're not in charge of your own destiny, things cannot improve, there's nothing I can do, then you relent to the status quo. You relent to the onslaught of the strongman, as Bob was describing. And so this is why it's that much more important to say you are in charge of your own destiny, you can improve things. Both of those things are more true locally than they are anywhere else. And if you don't, if you throw up your hands and just accept what you're given, then you become Illinois. And eventually you become Venezuela. Ryan and Joliet.
Hi, Dan and Amy. I'm on the ground in the school choice movement, and I think one of the issues that we have, whether it's critical race theory, whether it's teaching religion in schools, until we can end the political rhetoric of school choice and get to parent choice, and I suggest all your listeners go and listen to the TED Talk of Ashley Berner on YouTube from the Johns Hopkins Institute, and just really talks about the history of the American public school, the history or the landscape of American education, how it relates to the rest of the world. And how we are not like the rest of the world from a pluralistic standpoint, and giving options to our parents, because whether it's the CTU strike right now, you know, I believe the union has every right to strike, but I don't think parents, if they don't want their kids in that situation, shouldn't have access to their per pupil funding.
Thanks, Ryan. Dave in Downers Grove.
Yeah, Dan and Amy. I forgot what I actually called about, but I do want to say something about the teacher strike. I'm a truck driver. I don't know when I'm ever in a safe environment. Oh, I know why I called. I called because I have a family member who said that if you voted for Trump, you're a racist. And she's a fourth grade school teacher. And I said, even the black and brown people that voted for Trump and your grandma? And she said, yeah. I think this is being taught throughout our schools already.
No,
the divide hate.
Yeah, thanks for the call. No question. No question. No, of course it's happening. It's not just at that middle school in Missouri. That's why Rufo is bringing it to your attention, and we're bringing his work to your attention. Because, of course, it's afoot. Susan and Glencoe saying the same thing. Of course it's afoot. Now what are you going to do about it?
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Ben Rhodes was President Obama's national security advisor, you remember. He's the one that penned an expansive piece talking about, very proudly, about how he manipulated the dum-dums in the D.C. press corps, turning them into an echo chamber for whatever line of argumentation or misdirection or trial ballooning he wanted out into the ecosystem. Here's what he has to say about the press corps' job now. I'm sure they will dutifully follow Ben Rhodes' direction, just as they did during his Obama years.
I think the other issue of Homeland Security, as John pointed out, yes, there's a security issue. How do you identify armed militias who are intent on doing harm? But there's a broader societal issue that it's going to take many years to detox the disinformation, the lies, the hate that has been spread. A whole segment of the American population has been radicalized by what has happened over the last 4 years and by the fact that Donald Trump is no longer there. They can no longer see Donald Trump kind of representing their grievances in the highest office. And so those grievances are going to go back underground. And I think there's a lot of work to be done to deal with the broader societal issues that go beyond what even national security, Homeland Security professionals could do.
That's quite a chilling statement if you try to attach any implications to it. If you wanted to take Ben Rhodes' advice and counsel, need to detox people who Donald Trump, whose grievances Donald Trump gave voice to, and, you know, under the guise of national security and homeland security because of the hate and the lies that they spew and spread. I'm sure the Fourth Estate will happily serve as the comm shop for this sort of purge. Well, will they? Holman Jenkins writing in the Wall Street Journal the day before President Biden's inauguration. Jefferson said a free press is democracy's indispensable bulwark. If so, returning courage to our newsrooms may be more important to bringing America back and restoring a semblance of consensus than any job Mr. Biden will formally accept on Wednesday. Returning courage to our newsrooms may be more important to bringing America back and restoring a semblance of consensus than who the President of the United States is. Well, what are the prospects of that, returning that courage? To help us with that question and get some reaction to what Ben Rhodes had to say about purging what he terms hate and lies, pleased to be joined by Stanley Kurtz, Senior Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Stanley, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, thanks so much for having me.
What about Ben Rhodes' comments?
Well, Ben Rhodes is the leading edge of a movement among Democrats to try to influence the way the rest of the country thinks, bring them around to their point of view. And what I've actually been writing about lately is a movement that's been going on in the schools, which I think will escalate under the Biden administration and which is already highly advanced in Illinois. I've been working on an Illinois proposal to really turn K through 12 schools into leftist indoctrination camps. And there's a rule to that effect called culturally responsive teaching and leading standards that's already been approved by the Illinois Board of Education. And it's coming up for final approval before the General Assembly on February 16th. And if that rule is approved, then every K-12 Illinois school will legally and formally be charged with doing progressive indoctrination of its students. And I think Ben Rhodes will be very happy with that.
Well, that's right. We've talked about that. We were just talking about Chris Rufo's piece in City Journal about the same happening at a middle school in Missouri, which in Springfield, Missouri, which was excellent. That's not if it happens. That's when it happens in Illinois. And so, so you have the purge happening at K through 12, indoctrinators indoctrinating the teachers so they can indoctrinate the students. But then the D.C. press corps, if Holman Jenkins is right, serving as the propaganda arm of the state rather than as a check on state power. What's your sense of the prospect of returning courage to our newsrooms in terms of, number one, its import, number two, its possibility?
Well, obviously, the treatment of Biden during the election was pretty pretty pathetically hands-off by the media, and they're going to want to do everything they can to prop Biden up. It's interesting because the press seems to have crossed a kind of Rubicon during the Trump years where they would just openly, it wasn't even an effort to disguise it anymore. You'd pick up the New York Times, and on the front page there would be almost an open editorial as a supposed news story attacking Trump, saying he's wrong and lying and all of these things. So is there any basis for them to go back and being what we've always thought of a press as being? I'm pessimistic about it, and more importantly, I think the public has lost trust in the media, and the media has just divided up into camps and decided there's no point trying to appear as anything other than biased because we've got our supporters. If you step over the line of progressive views now in the mainstream media, you'll get slammed on social media by all of your followers. And so I don't see a lot of prospect of change at this point. I think we've divided into two warring camps of media.
Well, it's more than slammed, isn't it? Media critics out this week, including Max Boot over at The Washington Post, calling for essentially Newsmax and OANN to suffer the same fate as Parler. You have Fox News. There was a rumor Fox News may hire David Rhodes, Ben Rhodes' brother, former head of news at CBS, to be their head of news at Fox News Channel. I mean, talk about the consolidation of opinion and the formal elimination of dissent. That is happening with no apology and no hesitation.
I do think we're headed into dangerous waters. I suspect that if they really do try to totally change Fox News and continue to crush Parler and all of these things, you're going to see some sort of reaction. Hopefully that will be other outlets that will come to compete rather than people complaining more heartily, so to speak. People have to have a way to express their opinions and hear the news from a perspective that they trust. And if that is taken away, then we're really going to be terribly divided as a country. Biden talks about unity, but if by unity he means that we all have to think the same thing and hear the same perspective, then he's going to be sorely disappointed.
Well, don't you think it would be a good idea then for former President Trump to start his own network or his own media platform somehow, some way, so that 74 million people can share ideas and not feel, you know, like they're being attacked if they say something that the left doesn't like?
I think that's a real possibility that he will try to do that. And, of course, if he does, then there'll be folks who try to somehow suppress that. And we'll be back in the soup again. But yeah, I really don't see how you can silence half the country. I just don't think it's possible. And when they try to do it, it's going to backfire on them, politically, I think. And we've had a pattern, that when Democrats come in, and control Congress, they go too far. And that's how Newt Gingrich and the Republican Congress swept in after decades of Democratic rule in 1994. You saw the Tea Party and the push against Obama in 2010, and all the off-year elections went heavily to the Republicans. And I think you're going to see that again if Democrats overreach, and I think they're already overreaching.
Perhaps the last bastion, the firewall, is what we do here, which is talk radio. And when Democrats, socialists get in, you can almost guarantee there'll be the effort to resuscitate the fairness doctrine. To, if they can't silence you altogether, they can certainly try to manage the content you're able to provide.
I think that's true. I have to say, I had a little personal experience myself in Chicago back in 2008, the Obama campaign. I was the fellow who went and dug in the archives in Chicago and found the history of Obama and Ayers working together, and the Obama campaign tried to keep me off the radio at the time and sent thousands and thousands of people to demand that I not be there. So I personally have a direct experience and a strong belief that the left will try something like that. But again, I just don't think it will work in America. As bad as things are, I think we're still America, and the public isn't going to stand for it, and the Democrats will find that when they try to crush all opposing voices, it's just going to backfire on them. And by the way, to get back briefly to that, the teaching stuff, I wouldn't give up on that in Illinois. I think it can be stopped. There's been a lot of public reaction against it. And February 16th is the big decision in the General Assembly, and I think people can still push back on that.
He is Stanley Kurtz, Senior Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Stanley Kurtz, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word APP to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy, Amy, as you know, aloha means both hello and goodbye. But for you, as it pertains to the state of Hawaii, it means only goodbye.
Yeah, so we went to Hawaii because we got a great deal on some flights over Christmas. And I checked with my veterinarian. I checked with American Airlines twice and said, does she have all the paperwork needed? I got
my dog, Bunky.
Yeah. Because she's my emotional support dog, and she travels with me everywhere. Don't look like that.
Right. Because your emotional support beehive wasn't cutting
it. Hey, so she passed all the, you know, I had all the paperwork. I had the rabies shot, the microchip, the blood work done, the shots. All the paperwork was a stack, like a, you know, pretty about this thick of paperwork. And once we landed in Hawaii, they said that I did not have what's called a neighborhood island inspection permit. And I said, all right, well, how can I get one? And it was Christmas Eve, and then the next day was Christmas. They said, well, the veterinarians, they aren't working. So I said, well, what do you suggest I do? She said, you've got to go back to the mainland. I said, well, what's from stopping me to just walk out the door? I'm an American citizen. You're an American citizen. And that's when they called the police. And Peyton and Eli are like, oh, Mom, no, Mom, please. Mom, don't go there. So she said, just come back to Honolulu. We'll pay for it. And we'll go through the quarantine for the animals. They have a quarantine spot for your animals there. So they flew me from Kona to Honolulu. I get there and I walked in that quarantine place. It's you want to gouge their eyes out, the human beings that are running that is animal abuse. They put these animals in cages and they never walk them, so you'll be gone for 10 days and the dog will never leave the cage where they eat, sleep, and poop in the same cage. There's no bedding for them to sleep on. I'm not doing this. So she said, well, your only other choice is to go back to the mainland. So I flew that night from Honolulu, Dallas, Phoenix, drove to Tucson, gave my mom the dog. But then by that time, my 3-day COVID negativity test had expired. So then I had to get back in line at the Phoenix airport, wait 9 hours to take a COVID test, which I passed, but I missed my flight. Then I finally got to Hawaii. And you know what the thing is? I'm never going to Hawaii again. Never, ever. If I knew they are militant. Because then once you land after going all through that, then you have to take another test. And if you test positive, the military is there to escort you to your hotel. Then they wait for you to make sure that you don't leave your hotel room for 10 days.
Yeah, like a Cuomo camp.
Yeah, exactly.
So wait, so you got held up because your dog didn't have a shot.
Right.
And then you had to go back to the mainland.
Mm-hmm. I was in there for like 23 hours.
And then you had to fly to Phoenix because you had to drop your dog off with your mom.
Yeah, and the Phoenix flight was canceled, so I had to go Dallas, then Dallas-Phoenix.
And then you went Dallas to Phoenix because you had to get rid of your dog because you couldn't get the shot for him because the right. veterinarians were
all
not
closed.
Working over the holidays. And then you flew back from Phoenix to Kona.
And by that time, the vacation was more than halfway over.
Yes.
And it wasn't really a vacation. But you know what I am now? Dan, look at me. Executive Platinum on American Airlines. I flew 4,272 miles. Uh-huh. Upgrades, free upgrades, and I get checked bags for free.
I think that's karma for your phony baloney emotional support animal designation.
All right, but the bottom line is I got a letter yesterday from the governor of Hawaii letting me know that this is an official warning in all caps for failure to comply with state law regulations. I violated code HAR-429-5.
All right, so if anybody on the mainland or any of the islands sees a 6-foot blonde walking around, assume it's Amy Jacobson and contact local authorities.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.